Hi, fabulous radio listeners, and welcome to yet another episode of Sex Talk. I am your host, DJ. My headphones aren't working, and tonight we have a very special program for you. We are going to discuss my... let's start from the beginning.
Don't turn this into just about you, right? Because this involved all of us.
It was a group trip.
I've gathered all of my very special Sex Talk co-hosts here in the studio, and Lance, of course, DJ... DJ, I actually don't know what we call you anymore.
You can just call me Peter.
DJ Peter.
Another person who lacks...
style, panache.
Or a desire to hide behind some sort of craven facade.
DJ Carey and DJ...
John.
DJ John.
Ooh.
DJ, my microphone doesn't work. I thought your name for tonight was going to be DJ. Thank you, ma'am. May I please have another?
2000.
Well, it was... It was, at first, but then I was looking... See, as you know, every week, in honor of national... So, let me start at the beginning. President Clinton has declared this week to be National Alter Your Life Week, and he's urged every one of us Americans to go do something different, just think outside the box, do something a little bit different to improve your life or, you know, change your life in some way.
Is this a sign of another sign of Deepak Chopra's... increasing pull within the administration?
Well, I think it is. I think, in fact, I don't think President Clinton makes a decision before consulting the seven spiritual laws of success.
And so we can assume that this week he's sleeping with a redhead then? Or
I don't know if he's sleeping. So in line with this, I believe it was Lance who first suggested that I think outside of my own homosexual box. And see what how the other half lives, the other side of the...
I can't be the first to suggest that. Maybe a parent back when you were 15 or 16. Have you tried the ladies? I'm sure they said.
Actually, I have a little vignette to share, if I may. Well, okay. Before this
none of us have the power to stop
before
you.
Before this gets too meta, what happened? I was in Minnesota at a family reunion, and I was driving through the country back roads with my mother, and I commented on how lovely my grandmother is. My grandmother's in a nursing home. She had a very beautiful nurse, and a woman, female, and I said, I really like that nurse. She's really fabulous. I'm really glad she's taking care of grandma. She's really beautiful. And then my mother said, oh, I didn't realize you were attracted to women. And I'm like, well, I don't think I really am. And then she said, oh, well, if you weren't in a relationship with a man right now, would you consider dating a woman? And I'm like, no. And then she got very quiet.
Well, there's an interesting twist of logic there, because if I said to my mother, oh, that's a beautiful vase, I don't think she'd assume that I'd want to, you know, deposit my genetic questionable seed.
My mother might very well, based on experience, think that. So.
Well, you have conditioned her to think this.
True. Wait, is there some story about you and genitalia in a vase that we should be aware of?
It was all documented in the recent movie American Pie, so I don't think we need to go into it.
So, but let's get to the real meat of the show, which is the Sex Talk field trip to...
the Highway Playground.
Where do we begin?
So I will, since you're having trouble deciding where we begin, I'll say we begin at the Arena Health Club, which is the skankiest location for...
Can you turn down my microphone
kind
while
of
I move
it? Strange, old, mostly ugly homosexual men to go and have sex in a really filthy place. And and some of the Sex Talk co-hosts had ventured out there with DJ 2000 to kind of see how that see what that scene was all about. And as we were leaving, I believe it was either Lance or I who said to DJ 2000, we need to bring you somewhere the as close as we can get legally to the male heterosexual, the male straight equivalent of that. And I believe DJ 2000 mocked us and said, well, I've been to your little strip clubs. Mm-hmm. And at which point I said, or someone said, no, you haven't, because you haven't been to the Highway Playground.
That was you, actually, Peter. You
was me. Okay.
You do deserve the credit for that.
Well, thank you. Thank you. How could we describe the Highway Playground?
I'd been searching for metaphors all week of the form of, that place was so skanky and troubling that, where that means I had to wash under my eyelids, or I had all my skin removed and dry cleaned and returned to me. See, but really, my feeble attempts at metaphor don't really capture.
But I think you're going for the wrong thing. I don't think it was. It had a certain kind of charm, actually. I found it. I found it kind of quaint. It's sort of like going to Amish country. I mean, sure, you know, the place that you stay at and eat at might not be as clean and sanitary as the Hilton, but it has its own kind of down-home charm. And in the same way, you know,
I'm now wondering what kind of Amish people you know, because it doesn't really fit with my thoughts.
Well, let's just set the scene a little bit. So this place is out about 40 miles out of town. Somebody give DJ 2000 cookie before he passes out. So this place is out about 40 miles southwest of Pittsburgh. Sorry, southeast of Pittsburgh, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of bordering on country.
It's on Route 70 in Yukon, Pennsylvania, about one quarter of the way from New Stanton down to Washington.
Yeah. That is
tell them
country,
Pete sent you.
Tell them I sent you. That's right.
So you walk in, and there's immediately a turnstile, like you'd see it in an athletic stadium, with a sign that says one quarter to enter. And foolishly, I and another visitor who isn't here now,
DJ Luck of the Irish.
DJ Lucky Charms, as I like to call him. both popped in our quarters. But then the strippers, who were sort of lounging around, told DJ 2000 that he need not insert his quarters, that the thing was broken anyway.
I wonder why they did they sense that I was so sophisticated that I didn't need to put in the quarter?
I think so. And that theme of the stripper sensing how sophisticated you are will play itself out throughout the entire evening. Right? So we step into this place, and the front room is just all porn, wall to wall. They probably had racks of porn on the ceiling, but I didn't look up to check.
That's the warm-up room, I think.
Yeah, that is the warm-up room. And then immediately to the right is a corridor that leads back to where the action is.
The only thing I saw on the ceiling were spooge stains.
Okay, well, that's even better than porn, along some metric. And off to the right, there's a little area where the dancers were hanging out. Right?
Congregating.
Also
a snack bar
with no snacks and a horribly maladjusted soda fountain.
The thing that I thought was really beautiful, the thing that this place had that the arena did not have, and hello, arena, take notice, is free all-you-can-drink soda and all-you-can-eat food. Once you paid your admission price, I mean, if there were actually food there, which there wasn't.
Right. I've actually been there at times when they used to give out beer for free, which they don't anymore. I believe the laws got changed. And they also used to have really bad kind of Stouffer's frozen pizzas that you could get. And now I saw the hot dog machine. And I don't know that – I mean, hot dogs are kind of questionable at the best of times, but I don't know that I would really risk one.
But if you're going to eat at a strip club anyway, you've got to assume that the food's not going to be the top quality.
So, but anyways, this whole place had the general ambiance that if you touched anything with your bare flesh, you weren't sure if you would stick or not. There was sort of a layer of grime on everything. You would walk through this corridor back to where the action is, into this room, I don't know, maybe 30 by 20, a little longer, maybe 40 by 20. There was a runway in the middle where the dancers would dance, and then sort of almost a bar rim around the runway, and then chairs for the patrons. And then some actually atrocious lighting for a strip club. But the most interesting thing about the runway is that about a third of the tiles were missing. And the dancers...
You had bare splintered wood.
Yeah, you had bare splintered wood and grout, right? And the dancers, who we'll get to their activities later, but in any case, their naked backsides were on the bare splintered grout a lot, which leads me to be baffled at why they haven't organized and demanded...
There was at least one dancer
who refused to dance.
Actually, DJ Carrie and I were hanging out at that part, and there was at least one dancer who kind of like shook her head at us and said, no, come up here, because I don't want to dance on the splintered tile. Mm-hmm. So...
But you'd think that the owner or whoever could go to Home Depot and pay 20 cents per tile for a total of probably $6 and retile the...
What I'm sensing here is frankly, a lot of you all having a bunch of preconceptions about this place. You weren't willing to think outside the box. I went in there and I accepted the place for what it was, and this is why, you'll learn later, I got all the love.
That may be true, but for me, that place forced me to think inside the box.
I have to say, DJ Lance was very uncomfortable for pretty much every moment I saw him, almost as uncomfortable as DJ 2000, which we'll talk about.
Well, DJ 2000 had a life-altering experience that rendered him completely comfortable at some point, but we'll get to that. I say not that I was uncomfortable so much as it was a calculated strategy to get the – there was an element of that, but it was also a calculated strategy to get the strippers to leave me alone. Because this is the way they operated. They were dancing on the – they were dancing – so two of them would be dancing at a time, and they would identify men, walk up to them, and dance is sort of not the right word, but it's the word we'll use in front of them. And then they were naked except for a garter, and they would hold out their garter, and you had to put a dollar inside it, right? Mm-hmm. And it was sort of an unspoken rule that if she walked up to you and started dancing, right, you had to kick in, right?
I haven't been to a strip club that's not like that.
Yeah, I would say first of all that if you don't want that to happen, you need to not be sitting at the stage, and that if you're sitting at the stage and ignoring them, that doesn't really count because you're still sitting there taking up valuable space that some other horny patron could be occupying.
True.
There is also, I'd like to kind of shift the conversation from talking about the ambiance of the place and talk a little bit about the dancers themselves. One of the things that distinguishes this strip club or dance club or whatever you want to call it from every place that I'm aware of in Pittsburgh is that the women are, for the most part, totally nude. There are no pasties. There are no G-strings. Yes. Okay. No, it is nowhere near McKee's Rocks. It is, you would take the turnpike to exit 8 and then head south on Route 70 for about 10 minutes, about?
About 10 minutes, yeah.
And look for the XXX Live Nude Girls sign. This is obviously what is distinguishing them from all the other various strip clubs and why I think they have such an active and interested clientele.
Not only are they naked, but their dances seem designed to make sure that you know that they're completely
naked. There is no mystery at the highway.
Yeah, to eliminate any possible question.
I have learned more about gynecology at the highway playground than it's fairly forward. And I would say that DJ 2000, this was one of the things I enjoyed most about this entire experience, was you being kind of, if you'll pardon the expression, plunged into this kind of sea of vulvae, sitting at the bar with this look in your face, and your description that you told us about was very accurate, but you just had this polite attentiveness where you were extremely uncomfortable. I mean, you wished you were anywhere else, but you felt like it was rude to look away, and you were trying to play along.
So could you tell that I was extremely uncomfortable? It was only because
it was a leisure activity for us at the other end of the bar, looking down and watching you be uncomfortable. It was fun.
So were we all uncomfortable? DJ Lucky Charms is uncomfortable.
You were all uncomfortable in different ways.
Mm. But see, I'm always uncomfortable. I mean, I can't go to the Giant Eagle and buy cheese without being uncomfortable. I mean, being uncomfortable is a way of life for me.
In private conversations, you reveal that normally when a woman is dancing in front of a straight man, like the straight man, it's hard to avoid being hypnotized by the exposed parts that you normally don't see when women are walking around, genitalia, winking sphincters, that sort of thing, right? But you told me that you, as a gay man, wanted to respect these women.
Mm. Because being homosexual is all about being respectful. Indeed.
Really?
I'd say for you described this, that you were trying to make eye contact and kind of not right. Stare rudely at their.
I mean, the real problem is because I went to a liberal arts college, okay, and I have like this burden of guilt impressed upon me, which is like, you know, must not objectify others, you know, must respect, you know, all forms of life. You're pointing at my crotch?
He's trying to get the cookies.
No. And so because I still haven't been able to completely erase that burden, I didn't want to be there, like, as a man objectifying these women because, you know, men have been objectifying women for, you know, millennia, right?
So. See, they want you to stare at the crotch. It's their job.
Well, I'll say as a straight man, I do the same thing. I mean, because, you know, you're thinking in the back of your minds, maybe if I look in their eyes, I'll get a date or something, right? I mean,
I don't think that's what DJ 2000 was doing.
Well, no. I'm saying I don't think it's unique to being gay that you're trying to not.
I mean, just to draw the distinction, though, like comparing our physical appearance to yours, I was glancing over at you occasionally, and you were just like eating it up. I mean,
absolutely,
you know,
absolutely.
You're standing there, your arms are sort of crossed, and you're like, "Yeah, baby, bring it on."
I feel very sorry.
Wink that sphincter at
me. I mean, okay, so you want to talk about objectification? I mean, this is not something that I do on a very frequent basis, but I feel very strongly that these people are up there. They're, you know, they're naked, they're dancing. You've paid your $15 or whatever. You're in, okay? Mm-hmm. So I feel very strongly that if I'm going to go, if I'm going to pay my $15 and sit down and be part of that scene, I'm going to do it. I'm going to enjoy it. I'm just going to operate under the assumption that me being there, enjoying it, and, yeah, devouring with my eyes or whatever, or being involved, is going to be more respectful to them than kind of me sitting at the bar going, oh, well, yeah, whatever, you're just some dancer, and I'm going to, like...
If you are of the opinion that this is a one way to look at this is if you are of the opinion that this is a male dominated aspect of it, that you should contribute to the money going to the women if that's what they need to get out of it, if that's the way you need to see it.
And I
personally am of the mood that I try to think of myself as having fewer hang-ups than average, so if this is a situation where none of my hang-ups apply, I should just go crazy.
Well, I mean, you're sort of eliminating the possibility for there to be a moral line here, right? I'm not advocating this position, but what if we'd gone to, instead of a strip club, a sexualized rat smashing club, right? Or a sexualized snuff film club, right? I mean,
okay, so like the answer to that is that I wouldn't have gone there in the first place.
Not even if DJ 2000 had lured you with promises of liquor and
blowjobs.
It would have had to be a lot of liquor and many blowjobs, but probably not.
So we do have a woman who was present,
yes,
right?
And I was actually going to say that perhaps if you're viewing this as just a viable form of entertainment, I think that it would be rude not to look at them. They are going through a lot of effort to make you look at them. Mm. And none of them seemed pressed upon that they had to be here. I mean, they weren't being subjugated. And I think that everybody objectifies pretty much everybody.
True.
You're making rash judgments just based on physical appearance.
True.
All the time.
Well, I think part of what was going on is that I don't think we were sure exactly what we were in for, except for Peter, who cleverly lured us into the situation, right? So a couple of us went to see, for the show, to see Jenna Jameson strip at Club E, I believe. And you were sort of farther away, and it was more of a show. And she's a very attractive woman, right? And it was very easy to get engrossed in that. But I wasn't expecting female genitalia held hovering, quivering,
like
six to eight inches away from my face, right? And I'm not necessarily saying that's a bad thing, but, you know, I guess I have to be be romanced.
It's a very different experience when you get within body heat range, basically.
Yes,
is
true.
How I would describe it.
Actually, I think we should remind our listeners, if they want to call in and share their own stripping experiences, or lack thereof, the phone number is 621-9728.
But back to the Highway Playground. Eventually, staring at the genitalia of the naked strippers became passe for us, and we decided to take it to another level.
And of course, since I am the eternal patsy, I was once again the target of your sick experiments.
I don't think it was our idea.
Well, see, this is the part.
You need to talk about the greeting that introduced you to this idea.
Mm. Well, so the same stripper who identified me as the kind of man who doesn't pay a quarter when he goes to a strip club also told me that not only could I watch the shows, but there were special services that I could take advantage of. Services like spankings, lap dances, and something she referred to as only Code Blue. We never got to Code Blue. We're going to have to handle that on a future show. But after we tired of the endless parade of winking sphincters and vaginas, I went back to that same stripper and I said, so tell me about this spanking vibe. What's that all about? And it was actually really strange. I don't know. Maybe she was trying to get me used to the idea, but she was being a little bit coy about the details. She was like, well, we'll take you somewhere, and spanking will happen, and you'll like it. And but she was very specific about the $40. It'll cost $40, which, of course, turned into $60 when she said she could bring a friend along.
Well, you didn't have to let the friend come along.
Well, I have a feeling it would end up...
You don't think that woman was strong enough to really do the damage?
Okay, look, the summary is you definitely got your money's worth as far as I'm concerned.
We all got our money's worth.
I mean, I get the feeling that... Well, anyway, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I get the feeling that I would have gotten the same treatment no matter how much I paid.
That's possible.
So
it's possible they played you like $10 bill. I don't know. Played you like a used Nintendo.
And so I was like, so tell me more about this spanking. Because I, as long-time listeners of the show know, I am a long-time aficionado of the S&M scene. And so I'm very hip to that vibe. And so she's like, well, you know, my partner and I will spank you, and it'll be fabulous. And I said, well, I want to bring my dorky friends along because they want to watch, because they've got some kind of sublimated homosexual thing going.
Well, I mean, either that or an alternate explanation is we wanted to make a better show because we wanted to be able to talk about what was happening. Mm-hmm. I mean, if DJ 2000 was getting spanked in a room alone, he could have brought in aliens to the story. He could have brought in any number of things that might have actually happened.
I definitely think DJ Manon and McAleer had a sublimated homosexual vibe going on. Okay.
Well, it is official show policy that DJ Lucky Charms, who's not here to defend himself, is really gay and just won't admit it to himself.
I'm not tired of the genitalia yet, so I'm pretty much clueless what all is going on around me at this point.
Yeah, these negotiations about what was happening were happening in secret.
Right.
But the thing that was strange was she was slowly letting me in on the truth. I was like, okay, well, my dorky friends want to watch. And she's like, oh, that's cool. It'll be more fun that way anyway. And, oh, by the way, well, that's the way we always do it. You're going to be doing it on stage. We're going to strap you to the wheel and humiliate you for the benefit of the entire audience.
Of course, DJ 2000 didn't tell us this was going to happen on stage.
And I was like, oh, that's cute. And so, well, I wanted it to be a special surprise for my special co-hosts, you know, thinking that we would all go off to some private room and then have me be, like, the next act. Would be a special treat, and maybe that would be the surprise, the moment of revelation that would actually finally break down the walls of DJ Lucky Charms' resistance to homosexuality, and he would we would spend the evening making sweet, sweet loving. That did happen, by the way. DJ
Coop Cullen.
DJ Joseph of.
Aramathia.
Of Ire.
Joseph O'Carry.
So,
DJ Blarney.
So, anyway, so the strippers are leading you away, and the rest of us are getting excited. And DJ 2000 is saying, don't worry, it'll all become clear in a moment. Just
and we're all doing various things. So I'm out in the magazine area taking a breather.
Doing a little Christmas shopping.
Doing a little Christmas shopping where one of the girls is trying to sweet talk me into a lap dance and being followed by a guy who's trying to give her $150 to have sex with him.
Really?
Yes.
Really?
And she was not at all receptive to this idea, by the way. I just want to say for the record.
Well, that's surprising because I actually thought
we're going to have to come back to that. Mm.
And DJ John comes tearing out of the room. And we're going to have to probably backtrack in time. But he just grabs me and says, you have to come in right now.
Interesting.
So to step back in time for a second, DJ 2000 disappears. We're still sitting at the end of the bar, DJ Lucky Charms and I. And all of a sudden it becomes clear that there's a curtain, and DJ John's there as well, and there's a curtain at the end of the stage at sort of the base of the base of the runway. And it becomes clear there's activity behind there. And then all of a sudden it occurs to us. They're putting him on stage. They're strapping him up to something on stage, right? And then the curtain gets withdrawn, and we see DJ 2000 stripped down to his...
I think we should hold it right there and backtrack even more in time because I want to know what went on behind that curtain. Like, was there secret stripper chat? I mean, was there preparation? Well, did you have to sign a release?
This is a good point because the bouncer took me away, and actually, this fulfilled a lifelong fantasy. I've always wanted to be taken away by the bouncer, and so he took me backstage, and I had this little chat with the two strippers, which I should describe. One was sort of a more or less ordinary female, and actually, perhaps a little. I mean, I hate to say this, a little bit chubby for a stripper.
Was this the blonde one?
Yeah,
yeah.
She had obviously just had a child. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That would be that look.
You all sense that. Interesting. Interesting.
You could see where, like, the skin had kind of not finished snapping back into...
But she was
very pretty.
Unimaginably
very nice.
Perky, though.
And very nice.
Very nice.
And very nice. Very
In fact,
kind.
She saved DJ Carey from having to use the disgusting bathroom.
That's right. She very kindly offered me the stripper's bathroom.
Was she lactating? Did anyone notice?
I hadn't looked that closely, actually.
Was she the one that stuffed DJ Lucky Charms' head between her breasts, or was that a different stripper?
I don't remember. I'm sorry, I'm eating all your cookies.
That's fine.
So the other stripper who reminded me is if you take star of the practice Laura Flynn Boyle and put her on the rack for about 2 years so that she's stretched out about a foot taller than she normally is and appropriately thinner and sleeker.
Kind of like a blonder version of those girls in the Robert Palmer videos.
But not completely. I mean, so right, take Laura Flynn Boyle, stretch her out, give her a female-to-male transsexual operation, and then give her another male-to-female operation. I mean, there was some kind of, like, drag
queen. She was very
vibe.
Square-jawed. Yeah. Very, she was, like, 6'5". I mean, she was tall.
She was I don't know if she was 6'5".
She, had the high
she was no taller than me.
Okay.
But you're tall.
She was very, but she was extremely thin and yes. slim for a woman as well. Like her bone structure was very
high-breasted, high-hipped, long-legged.
Yep, very long-legged. And ironically, there was a pole at the end of the runway, and she was the only person who really did anything with the pole.
It looked pretty amazing, actually, because I think she was so tall and thin. She looked like a pole next to.
Indeed, and she was almost as tall as the pole. Her head almost hit the ceiling, and so when she hung upside down, there was something going on.
And if I had not actually seen like the interior of her vagina area, I would have sworn that she was some kind of drag queen because she had somewhat masculine features.
Well, I mean, it's lucky that we were in sort of the optimal place for sex verification.
Hmm. So, I went backstage with the drag queen and the perky post-birth chick, and. They were, and it was interesting because we had earlier had this kind of conversation where she said, "Don't worry, it won't hurt that much." And I'm like, "No, no, you don't understand. I am, you know, an aficionado of pain. Just please."
Did you actually use the technical word "pain whore"?
I did actually, and she was actually very worried that you know I would freak out. And I was like, "No, no, you don't understand. You know, I've been to S&M parties. I'm a sex talk host. I've been a grad student for 8 years. I can endure almost any amount of pain." And she thought this was really exciting. She actually shook my hand and she said, "You are now my new best friend," which I thought
was this the perky one or the drag queen?
This is the drag queen.
Okay.
The reason for that, the 15-second explanation of that, is that I was watching news actually out in the room while she was watching it as well.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of hers, a policeman, had responded to a call that night to domestic violence. This guy had shot his wife and shot the policeman, and then the policeman shot this guy to death. The policeman was her friend, and he was injured, and she was very upset about it that evening. And that was you had said something like, she's like, "Oh, my friend got hurt."
Yeah.
That's what had happened.
Well, so she was in an emotionally vulnerable state. I mean, do you think she was filled with rage at the injury of a friend that might have led to a particularly savage beating later?
I'm kind of afraid to conjecture about that. I would think that DJ 2000 would be in a much better position to receive the brunt of the...
I mean, as a homosexual member of society, I'm used to actually being abused and people taking out their frustrations on me. So I just assumed it was yet another example of prejudice and society's lack of acceptance of my people.
Wait, what was her calling you her new best friend?
So do continue.
So 621-9728. Write that down. Call us 621-9728. And so I was like, "Look, seriously, let all your frustrations out. I can take it. I promise you. I'm a pain whore." And they took us backstage, and I was actually, this funny thing is that the thing I spent the most time obsessing about was my underwear. I had worn this particularly tacky kind of, you know, Walmart underwear, and it had some holes in it. It was kind of like, you know, junior high underwear. It was not very sexy.
Didn't have Obi-Wan Kenobis on it, too?
I would describe them as bright red briefs.
I was going to say "make love to me" red briefs, because I can't say the real name on the air.
And yet, you've rejected all of my homosexual advances.
I wasn't saying they're not make love to me, comma
DJ
James
Lance.
Thomas, yeah, DJ Lance.
So I was taking him backstage, and actually the other funny thing is I was wearing a leather belt, and the drag queen said, "Oh, this will be fun." And she decided instead of using her giant oversized splice water to beat me, she would use my leather belt, which I was wearing.
Just one more thing. There were actually discussions between me and DJ 2000 about swapping underwear for appearance's sake. Although in the end it was decided that that wasn't worth it.
Out of curiosity, what were you wearing?
Sensible boxers.
Oh. That was just a ruse to get me to get you down to your skivvies.
Oh.
So anyway.
You're so transparent. It's appalling.
But I fall for it every time. He just says it's for the good of the show. And
So I go backstage. So they're being actually pretty nurturing and pretty fun. And then they're like telling me what's going to happen. And they're like, "You know, if you ever freak out, or we'll be checking with you periodically. And if things, you know, if you're having a problem, what they did not do, which has surprised most of the people who beat me in the past, have agreed on a safe word. You know, I would say... In my previous S&M experiences, I would say yellow if I wanted the scene to kind of slow down. Or I would say red, for example, if I wanted the scene to halt immediately. And the reason you do that is because you don't want to choose, like, normal safe words like stop, because that might be part of the scene. Like, you might say, you know, stop it, daddy. I mean, you might actually might be part of your fantasy is to, like, say stop but mean to continue. So anyway, but she said, no, we don't have any use for those stop words. We'll just sense whether you're in trouble or not, which I thought was a little bit.
I think a good safe word in that situation might be, I won't tip you if you're
going. So the bouncer tied me up to the wheel, and they threw the curtain back, and then
it was like Corey was there, spread eagled, naked down to his underwear,
DJing with my headphones.
If you've seen the famous diagram of Leonardo da Vinci did of the naked man and kind of in the circle, spread eagled. Well, that was DJ 2000, right up there.
So I want to do a little go around to the room here. What were you all thinking at exactly that moment, DJ Carey? Let's start with you.
Actually, thought it was really neat because throughout the entire show, every time the pair of girls would go off the stage, there would be the announcer saying, oh, they're available for lap dances or private dances, and domination wheel. No explanation of domination wheel. Mm. And when I had asked one of the strippers, she sort of hedged a little bit. It was that kind of coy, ha, ha, ha. Well, you know, there's this. But then they were walking away to the next dollar, which I quite understand. So I was kind of excited about seeing it in action.
I'm sorry. When you say excited, do you mean you have actual bona fide sexual feelings for me, DJ 2000, the host of the show?
Well, of course, but actually not at that time.
Okay. So DJ John, you had a... I'm sorry.
I'm actually kind of annoyed at myself for being, you know, gape-jawed at the big display up in front. I didn't think they could afford such a humongous prop, actually. So I missed the view of... when Corey had gone away to make
DJ
all these arrangements,
headphones not working.
We'd lost our sideline entertainment of watching the uncomfortableness. So we had to. It was replaced by
genitalia.
10 or 12 fraternity guys filled up the opposite side of the bar at about the same time, and they had the whole tension thing going on for the first half hour that they were there. So. Now, when the curtain opens and we see the wheel and the big display, I'm staring directly at it, and so I missed their reaction. That's actually the one bit of the show that I wish I could have had right from the beginning, is watching the remainder of the reaction of the crowd. But since the surprise was also for me, I was partaking of the surprise and could not do that.
Well, I was actually, as I said, I missed the unveiling of the curtain, but DJ John came and got me.
That's right.
Quickly.
And as soon as I came out of my shock, I went.
Yeah, which I appreciate. And basically, I just thought to myself, "Wow, cool." I was very pleased. You know, something different happening. And do you want us to describe our opinions overall, or just of that initial moment?
Well, you know, whatever. For most specifically, I want you to describe your feelings of desire for me finally seeing me. Although you'd see me naked or semi-naked at the arena, so. How did your sexual feelings for me differ?
Well, we've talked about this on the show before, that I have this total mental block about the whole domination scene, and that I've never found it even remotely sexual. I think of it as just, wow, it's kind of nifty, and, whoa, look, leather, that's fun. But it doesn't have that sort of reaction. I thought, wow, what a show. This is going to be cool.
Interesting.
I was just thinking, here we go.
So were you actually wondering whether you'd be able to make bail for me that night in case it came to that?
Not later, yes, at that moment. At that moment, it all had sort of the fun je ne sais quoi of an 8-year-old birthday party.
621-9728 are the phone numbers. If you're not calling in because you are shy, don't worry. We can beat that out of you.
Yes, DJ 2000 used to be shy until he was strapped up to a metal wheel by two strippers and beat.
I mean, I don't mean to, like, make an obscure film reference, but it reminded me of Pasolini's, well, in almost any Pasolini film, being up on the wheel. You know this guy, Pier Paolo Pasolini, sort of Italian.
I believe you're
going
to have to enlighten both us and our listeners.
You know, he's famous for making all these...
films about guys on wheels getting beaten.
Right. Pretty intense films about Salo. Have you heard of the movie Salo? Look. All of you listeners out there, go to IMDb. Look up Pasolini. Sorry, but, you know, He's some kind of Italian filmmaker. He was actually killed by some kind of gay lover who ran over him with a car or something.
While being beaten out of wheel.
But he made all these kind of pretty advanced films with
so,
a bunch of torture
so
and so on.
You're on the wheel, and they have handy implements. One of them has your belt doubled over, as discussed before. And the other has a Texas-sized fly swatter.
Indeed.
And they're kind of slapping you with it.
So at this point, right, the curtain's been wheeled back. Moment of tension, and then all of a sudden they lay into him.
I mean, the frat boys are all going, yeah, yeah.
Hit him harder!
If they're not, I imagine that they are.
I don't remember them doing that, actually.
Actually, I think not initially, but as the strippers were encouraging them to participate.
As they overcame their initial shock and disgust.
It started out rather tame. It was just, writing all over you and soaking you down with a super soaker.
They did indeed write on you. What did they write?
Slut and pussy, I think.
How long did that take to fade away?
Well, it's actually interesting. I think they kind of bothered me. Although
that's in a sense of wimp, right?
I think a cat kind of bothered me. Although
that's in a sense of wimp, right?
I think a small kitten, pussy cat.
But anyway, so the beating starts out. It seems relatively mild at this point. Again, like the one with the fly swatter, it feels like she's swatting a fly, right? How did it feel for you?
Well, it was pretty tame at first. I mean, I think she was also trying to feel me out to see how much I could take, because lots of guys are like, they think they're into this whole beating thing, but when it starts to hurt, they start to freak out. But they don't have my 8 years of graduate school experience. And so I was like, bring it on, baby. So right after they're swatting with the fly swatter and who knows, maybe tweaking my nipples or whatever a little bit. And they're like, how are you doing? And I'm like, please, I haven't even noticed anything yet. Honey, give me your worst. And so I think they turn up, at that point, they probably turn up the intensity a little bit.
Yeah. And I should add that the woman that's been described as the dry queen, in the same way that Boris Becker's long limbs allowed him to get off monster serves in Wimbledon, this woman's long arms made it look like she could throw a lot of leverage into those fly swatter strikes and those belt strikes.
And she did. So she was whipping my chest, my thighs, most of my upper torso, I guess. The thing that I actually shied away from was she started whipping my testicles a little bit. And I had never done that before, and I wasn't sure how much of that I could take. So I kind of gave her the little telepathic, let's not go there kind of look. She shied away from that, which was actually interesting. I mean, maybe I should have explored that a little further, although.
How much inversely, like oddly, how much, even though you were the submissive figure, how much control you had over her?
Interesting. I think, indeed, I was probably the one most in control of that scene. And so the thing about this wheel, which is nice, is that it actually rotates. And so at some point when the intensity increased, the bouncer started spinning, rotating me back and forth.
They didn't actually give you a full spin, as far as I could. I was hoping he'd do a full Price is Right, just come on, big bucks, no whammies, and make you go spinning.
I was too, and I was somewhat disappointed that didn't happen.
Just kind of like inverted you fully.
Yeah, it was more like 180 degrees one way and 180 degrees the other.
However, given the state of repair of the stage itself, perhaps the wheel would have gone spinning off.
Do you think I looked fat?
No.
Not at all, actually.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So the intensity started increasing.
So it started hitting me harder. And so, I don't have a very clear memory of this, but at some point I actually started to have to concentrate a little bit on enduring the pain.
Yes, we could see you begin to wince.
Was that the whipping, or was it from the hot wax and clothespins appeared at some point as well? How did those relate?
Indeed, they did put clothespins on the tender flesh of DJ 2000's inner thigh at some point.
And nipples,
and they poured hot wax down his crotch.
A couple of times, actually.
Yeah, I think that was actually more for the benefit of the audience. I mean, the other things hurt more. I mean, I've hot waxes and clothespins are actually, I mean, they may look kind of dramatic, but they're actually pretty tame. Clothespins, if you leave them on for a really long time, can start to hurt. But actually, the whipping that I'd experienced up to that point, the clothespins and the hot wax were actually not that painful. And I think I just probably tried to make it seem like it hurt for the benefit of the audience. But that was actually not my most painful moment.
Oh, we appreciate it.
So at some point they let you down from the wheel, right?
And I dragged him down.
And dragged him down from the wheel.
And I thought that it was over.
This is the real point where the frat boys really started laying in on the harder, because they didn't feel like they'd gotten their show yet.
And if I remember correctly, they made you walk on all fours and bark like a dog down the runway, correct?
Well, it was very interesting because I was, for the most part, laughing while this was happening. And I don't think I could explain why I was laughing. I think it was partially nervousness, partially because it was so outrageous, partially because you were obviously reveling in all the attention. But as they kind of drove you down – one thing was as they drove you down the runway, they were actually treating you harder and harder. So they were beating you harder, particularly the drag queen. At one point, she kind of wrapped the belt around your neck and rode your back like a horse.
I kind of liked that part. I thought that was pretty
They did the bark like a dog. And then at one point, you actually got close enough that I could really see your face very well. And it was like, and it happened to DJ Lance too, because we were sitting next to each other. And almost at the same moment, in mid-laugh, we both stopped laughing and kind of had that vibe going where, uh-oh, you know, wow, we're laughing at him, and boy, he's really being degraded. And what is that saying? What is that saying about us, or what's it saying about me that I'm laughing at this so hard?
Yeah, it stopped being fun and games, and all of a sudden we started to be engaged in something altogether more serious.
And I was watching the frat boys, and next to me was a very large, very athletic black man who was just kept turning to me and saying, can you believe this? This is out of here. I just can't believe this. Can you believe he's doing that? And it was very
interesting. So was he enjoying that, or was he alarmed?
I think he was enjoying it in the same way I was enjoying it. I mean, I think it was so far out that you couldn't help but enjoy it in some sense. But at the same point, you know, he was obviously thinking to himself, I would never go do that.
I mean, I think that no man could watch that scene without a complicated knot of feelings, right? There's just sort of the amusement of some guy getting beaten, but then also there's the horror of some guy getting beaten, and the sexual attraction provided by an attractive woman doing the beating.
And it was clear to me that these women, these strippers, were into the beating, and I think there's a complicated knot of feelings there, that this is a role reversal for them, that instead of just luring dollars from their bodies, from the use of their bodies, here they're getting paid to, you know,
beat the crap out of
some guy.
But so at this point, they have him down all the way at the end of the runway, literally 3 feet away from me and the rest of the people, and they've got him strapped to the pole, and they're beating him some more. Then they put a little dress on him, put some lipstick on him, and made him do a little dance.
And I think this is where you – do you want to describe how you did this? I could describe it, but I think that you might
– Well, I don't know. I think DJ Lance might be the best at describing my
dance. And it reminded me of something out of a David Lynch movie.
It was
awkward, yet with a restrained, potent sexuality.
It was burlesque.
Yeah,
it was
burlesque.
Dictionary definition of burlesque.
The thing I was surprised, though, is that given DJ 2000's long about attraction to DJ Lucky Charms, who's sitting 2 feet in front of him, while DJ 2000 was dancing in a manner supposedly designed to entice men, he did not look DJ Lucky Charms in the eyes. Rather, he looked at himself in the mirror as if he were a man just hoping to ignore the stares of all those watching him, just trying to get...
Which it's worth noting, many of the women do the same thing. I mean, when they're dancing, they're looking in the mirror.
Well, so I was trying to do a sort of... I mean, I don't really like dancing in real life, and so I was trying to do sort of a complex parody of a dance. And, for example, I did try to get down on the floor and pull my... Although I'm not limber, pull my leg over my head like they did, show my butthole to the audience.
Yes, you were not naked, and thus there was no winking sphincter.
And so, indeed, it was supposed to work for the audience on several levels. It was supposed to be both a dance and a parody of a dance, and it was supposed to also encode my own discomfort at being on the stage.
That was where they ended the show, and I think that in some subliminal level, the dancers were actually offended by that dance. I got
really?
That.
Really?
I don't know.
I was like, you started doing that. You lifted your leg up, and they just said, they flipped the switch off and said, okay, it's over, and
really?
Kind of dragged you away.
Oh, I didn't. I clearly wasn't as in tune with the dancers as many of the other people there, but I wasn't going to pick them. You go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, too, I'm not sure so much about the two who were working on you, but there were the other dancers were well before this, perhaps when you were being led down as the puppy dog, very uncomfortable about it. Some of them looked really tense and very unhappy.
I'm surprised because actually some of them came up on stage just to beat DJ 2000. Clearly, they weren't getting paid for it. They came up on their own volition just to beat him.
It was clear to me that this was beyond the normal spanking show.
Well, I'm not quite sure about that because, as we'll talk about in a minute, there was another spanking show a few minutes after DJ 2000 was put on.
Before we segue to that, I would like to ask DJ Carrie to say a few words about the benefits and differences of being a woman in that environment, because you got quite different treatment than all
the
rest of us.
Love me. Yeah, it was great. Actually, the first massive benefit was that I didn't need to pay a cover. Women get in for free.
Really?
The blonde stripper who was hitting you with the fly swatter was very happy to let me know about that.
Mm.
Also, she was extraordinarily kind when I was looking for the restroom. She absolutely insisted that I not even walk anywhere near the men's bathroom or the general bathroom, and showed me in through, I guess, their dressing room, and showed me where the restroom was there, told me, you know, make myself comfortable and feel
free to use it at any
point.
Do you feel more likely to become a stripper because of that?
Not there. But I'll keep it in mind as a future
career choice. Well, the dancers also treated you differently when they were dancing.
They did, actually. And I've noticed that not just there, but at most of the strip clubs that I've gone to, they're a lot more friendly, less tense. They actually make eye contact with me.
Breast contact.
Breast contact, yeah. I don't understand why.
You mean breast-to-breast contact or breast-to-forehead contact?
Breast-to-face contact, yeah. The drag queen woman seemed very excessively friendly to me in comparison to the other guys.
Hmm.
I don't think she really talked to anybody else or even looked at anybody else. But when she had been dancing for me, she did stick her breasts in my face, which was odd.
And her nipples and breasts actually collided with your facial structure?
Huh. I have yet to be at a strip club with you, DJ
Carrie,
where that has not happened to you.
Mm. Yeah,
wow.
They love me.
Anyways, actually, we're almost running out of time, and there's a fair amount of the story to get through.
Oh,
sorry.
No. There's a little bit of stuff that happened after you left. I do want to say one thing, and part of this involves you. So at this point, when they led DJ 2000 backstage, I thought he was a broken man. He's probably going to want to leave immediately and go get waffles. He won't want to face this crowd because he's been so thoroughly humiliated.
So you actually thought I was embarrassed and freaked
indeed,
out.
Indeed, indeed. And, I mean, clearly, again, another
projection.
Yeah, another mistake of my logic.
Just to be clear, so I had welts, I had bruises, I was bleeding.
We actually saw him bleeding, and we saw abrasions, and we also saw that, like, tortured look on his face with the lipstick, which was quite an effect, as he was forced to dance like a stripper for his friends. Mm. So I went backstage to wait for DJ 2000, and DJ Peter disappeared.
That's right. I got a chair dance. I wanted a chair dance, actually, with a very specific dancer, and I was waylaid by a different one, and I knew that we didn't have much more time there. I really had to go, and it was a complex combination of sympathy and impatience, which finally made me just go and get this chair dance with the one dancer I was with, a very nice woman. And I got my chair dance and ran into you backstage, DJ 2000.
Mm.
And that was pretty much it. It was educational.
The chair dance was educational?
Yes. Pretty much no contact except hair. And
That's disappointing because we had all sorts of projected fantasy scenarios about what was happening to you.
Fellatio was primary.
Yeah, fellatio was the main
scenarios. Did the strippers or did the strippers not perform fellatio on your erect penis?
Unfortunately, the strippers did not perform fellatio on my erect penis.
But anyway, so back to DJ 2000. When he came away from backstage, he was a different man. He was at peace with himself. He was in love with the world. I have rarely seen such a dramatic transformation. I was expecting to find a broken shell of a man, a concentration camp victim, and instead I found a self-help guru waiting to drink from the world like it was a fire hose. He got back on in the main room with the strippers and stuck his face as far up as he could, fascinated by everything he saw.
My head was basically in the vulva of the strippers, and people don't realize that the one of the incredible things about being beaten, and I think primarily the reason people do it, is this notion that once you've endured all this pain and all this damage, the brain, which is of course the organ of consciousness, releases all these chemicals of called endorphins, and you get this profound sense of euphoria and well-being, which is pretty incredible, and there's no experience quite like it. And so I was feeling pretty darn good.
So at this point, DJ Peter and DJ John and DJ Carrie took off at some point. Right. DJ Lucky Charms and I sort of wanted to leave, but DJ 2000 would have nothing of it.
In fact, you were more or less trying to crowd out the door behind us.
Yes.
While DJ 2000 grabbed you by the scruff of the neck and pulled you back in.
But it's lucky we stayed because...
Cookie. Give me a cookie.
It's lucky we stayed because someone else got up on the domination wheel.
Well, as it turns out, so I was praying to Jesus at that point, and I said, "Dear God, give me a sign if you want me to continue doing the sex talk show every week, and if you think that this whole grad student thing is the right thing for me, give me a sign, and specifically if that sign could involve the hottie college boys, frat boys that have just come in, especially the cute ones,
strung up on the domination wheel for everybody to see.
That would be excellent. And wouldn't you know it,
it happened.
5 minutes later." My primary favorite boy was this little kid wearing some kind of suspenders, and apparently I had bonded with the strippers after my own domination experience, and she told me that the suspenders boy had been on the wheel the previous week, but he wasn't likely to return.
But there were inklings that his friend wanted to get up on it, right?
Yes, his friend. And so next thing I knew, his hottie friend was stripped to his skivvies and up on the wheel.
Up at the beginning. And the key difference between that experience and DJ 2000's experience was that while the reaction of DJ 2000's friends was humor initially, tempered by sort of fear and worry later on, his friends were so into the beating aspect of it. It was unbelievable. They didn't stop shouting for the strippers to hit him harder until the very end.
Mm.
Right. And so he went through the same treatment, largely, DJ 2000 went through. Although he was sort of a lackluster participant, he didn't have the joie de vivre that carried DJ 2000's presence. He was sort of half-assed about the whole thing, right? But they beat him, they poured wax on him, they wrote whore on him, they took him down, made him dance for his friends. He sort of did a jackass dance that wasn't the sophisticated multi-level parody that DJ 2000 performed, right? They took him back, laid him down, and this was the best part, and I think you'll agree with me. All the time his friends are yelling, jumping up in their little white boy b-boy imitations, yelling, beat him, harder, harder, more, more, more. And at one point, they had him down on the floor, face up, right? You remember this? And so the drag queen stripper was stepping on him, and in fact all the strippers were wearing these giant stiletto heels, put the stiletto heel that she was wearing in his mouth, and his friend was 2 feet.
Suck it, bitch. Which, that was amazing. It encoded both. Suck it, bitch. Which, that was amazing. It encoded both his misogyny and his homophobia, you know, all in the same single utterance. I found it incredibly arousing. He was. I've dropped my cookie. He did make an actually better choice of underwear than I did. He was slim. He was attractive. He looked nice in his underwear, but indeed he didn't have the sophisticated kind of the whole vibe that I brought to the scene. But anyway, that provided me many special masturbation fantasies for days to come.
So,
well, I guess all's well that ends well.
We only have a couple more minutes. Are there any other topics we want to explore from this?
I'm fascinated by how that played out after we left. I'm surprised to hear about all of this because really I thought the frat boys were completely stunned by your performance.
They
were going harder at the beginning, and then when you actually did start your dance and suddenly produce extra levels to the performance, they had no idea what to think of that, the fact that you were still into it.
Well, I think what was going on was the same way that men love to embarrass their friends at a bachelor party. Like, they wanted to embarrass this one friend of theirs, and so they talked him into doing it.
Okay.
And that was sort of
the... And it was the fraternity, right? I mean,
we don't actually know there was a fraternity. It was
felt that way.
They just felt that way. Yeah.
And they did ask me when I was kind of hanging out afterwards, when I was still basking in the glow of my endorphins, a couple of the frat boys did come out and they were like, "Dude, didn't that really hurt?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, it sort of hurt, but also feels really good." And they couldn't quite. They
you
were like
intrigued and yet
alarmed.
We didn't talk to that guy after he was beaten, right? You didn't get the.
No, he. I only talked to him in my sexual fantasies, where he became my love slave.
So I have one final question, which is when you were up and you were getting beaten and you were being watched by 20 men who were there to see naked women, right? How did that feel as a gay man? Like, how did that tie in to your feelings for those men?
Well, to tell the truth, I actually was pretty unaware of the audience. I was only...
There was only pain?
Well, I was... Because I am, first and foremost, a computer scientist, I was primarily interested in my own performance. I didn't want to make... I just wanted to, like, not be a total buffoon. And so I was trying to, like, do my little dance properly, and I was trying to endure all the pain properly. And so... the audience was kind of irrelevant. Like you pointed out, for example, you know, I didn't make any seductive moves towards DJ Lucky Charms, you know, O'Sullivan. and that was because it was really, the audience was actually kind of irrelevant. It was basically all about me.
Well, what better way to end the show?
This is everything. Yes, of course.
But I do have one question, which is whether any of you, like, were there any erections or, like, labial effusions of...
Yes, I have the labial effusions.
You mean during your performance?
During my performance. Was anybody aroused?
Besides you?
Besides... I mean...
That was...
When you were watching this, were you getting wet in one way or another?
I can't speak for DJ Lucky Charms, but for me, no.
I was not, but I'm sure that DJ Tara O'Shaughnessy was indeed.
Well, so... But it was, on that note, a crushing note of defeat for DJ 2000's sexual magnetism. At least among the heterosexual population.
So I guess on that note,
we're supposed to wrap it up.
We're supposed to terminate. This is WRCT Pittsburgh. Thank you for listening. I guess we're done. Thank you all for joining me. Tune in next week, Tuesday at 11 p.m. for yet another fabulous story from the sexual bazaar that is my daily existence. And good night.